This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. It's our weekly take on all things property related. I'm Sim Wee Boon. A few days back, Malaysia tabled its COVID-19 bill in Parliament. This COVID-19 bill and the eventual act may alleviate some of the contractual and other issues that arose from the COVID-19 pandemic and Malaysia's movement control restrictions. But with this bill only being passed sometime later this month, is this a case of too little too late? And how will it affect homeowners, house buyers, you and me moving forward? I'll be exploring this today on The Property Show with Dato' Chang Kim Loon, the Honorary Secretary General of the National House Buyers Association. Thank you for coming on the show, Dato'. Now, I want to start off with the COVID-19 bill. It's been tabled. What are some of the pertinent issues that have been highlighted in the law that you can talk to us about?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. As soon as this COVID problem arise, Singapore Parliament passed the bill within 7 days. And it was operational by the 7th of April, whereas our government had to delay the tabling of this bill. All the binding contracts intended to offer protection under this legal shield, to me, I call it legal shield legislation, will be redundant because the affected parties would have moved on because of the inflection of time. Time being the essence of all contracts, it means that the bill is implemented retrospective will only come into effect after it's been published. Now, our system goes through MP, the House of Representatives, then the House of Senate before it is sent by our King, before it's made law and implemented by the government. It sounds like it's going to take another 2 or 3 more months before it is made published as law. Now, the minister has proposed a saving clause in the Act. It reads that notwithstanding Section 7, any contracts terminated, any deposit or performance bond forfeited, any damages received, any legal proceedings, arbitration or mediation commenced, any judgment or award granted or any execution carried out for the period 18th of March 2020 until the date of publication of this Act shall be deemed to have been validly terminated, forfeited, received, commenced and granted and carried out. It means what? You know, this paragraph that is in the law, we call it a saving clause. It means that let bygones be bygones, lah, because the law is delayed. Let bygones be bygones. This law, if it's published and implemented, shall be for those future cases or that. Whatever's under the bridge is under the bridge. Any aggrieved party who has suffered irretrievable predicament, let bygones be bygones. This is what it appears to be.
So what does this mean for us, for the people? What about stuff like late payment charges, extension of time and such? How will this affect it?
Well, saving clause is for whatever has been done is done. Meaning that if you have during the period of 18 March onwards, your money got forfeited by the developer and developer has already given you due notice. Well, money forfeited is forfeited. That's about it. That's what it says there. Is it? But there's a clause under the agreement. There's a clause in the law talk about late payment interest, delivery of written possession, defects liability period. I find the amendments are very simple. Simple amendments down there. Basically, they say that if there's late payment interest, it should be paid by the house buyer to the developer. But purchaser should apply to the minister for extension of time. There's also another clause whereby the developer delivers written possession late. The developer may apply to the minister for extension. Now, this particular act is only to govern from 18th of March until the 31st of August 2020. Anything beyond that, where the law here allows until the end of this year, house buyers and developers will have to write to the minister for extension. We are saying, why does it make it so difficult that buyers must write in to the minister for extension, or developer to write in to the minister for the extension whatsoever? Why don't we make the law outright to say that this particular time freeze is between 18th of March 2020 until the end of the year? Make it explicitly clear in no uncertainty that this law is for time freeze to protect all buyers, all developers between the period of 18th March until the end of the year. Why make it until the 31st of August? And anything beyond 31st August, parties involved must write in to the minister to exercise her discretionary power. Now, to me, discretionary power is not good at all. We always try to avoid discretionary power. Make laws be certain, with no uncertainty, to ensure that all parties play ball pursuant to the letters of the law.
So, with your experience, what type of consequence and ramifications can you foresee after the law is passed, especially when also the moratoriums and all these will be ending in September?
Now, the government part of the law also includes mediation. There's a Section 9 in the proposed COVID law to talk about mediation process. Mediation process is basically the minister will then come up with the appointment of mediator. He will also come up with a role of mediator as well as conduct and conclusion by mediator. We have got the Malaysian court. To solve problems. We should revert to Malaysian courts. Why is it that there is a need to form a mediation group to solve problems within this COVID? Mediation fees is high. It is expensive. And a single mediator appointed by the government may not have a neutral position on issues at hand. The courts are more cost-effective than mediation. And the courts are also neutral arbitrators, neutral arbitrator of disputes. Why is there a necessity to reinvent the wheel? Why is it that we need arbitrators to handle our problems? Mediators is a noble role. Yes, we know. It is a profession by itself. But we have got a Malaysian court to deal with disputes whatsoever. Why don't we delete the clause of mediation and all disputes whatsoever shall revert back to the Malaysian court? My proposal to the government is that we should have a specialized designated high court for a prescribed period to preside over all COVID-19 cases. After all, our federal constitution prohibits exclusion of jurisdiction of the courts. Furthermore, you must understand the appointment of mediator in Malaysian context may be industry influenced and the result of which justice is denied to the aggrieved party. That is very important. Let our courts do the work. No necessity to reinvent the wheel and have a press set of mediators or that.
Yeah, but I would imagine the response to that is that perhaps mediation would find a solution faster rather than going through the courts, which if everything goes through the courts and given experience, it's going to take a while before any solution or any resolution is reached.
Not so. The courts are much faster now. With all the e-filing, cases are handled very expeditiously. Those were the days when a court case was finished in 5 years' time. No. Court cases finish within a year. Things are much faster now. Things have gone online and the courts are very much faster, more expedient and cheaper as compared to mediation.
Okay. So what other issues are you highlighting within the COVID-19 bill then?
Well, we have also gone through the whole act, but we don't find anything in there that relates to strata-related issues. Strata, JMBs, MCs, sub-MCs, nothing in the law on this new proposal, COVID-19 law, talks about how we're going to address issues that relate to strata living. What about the delays in filing of necessary relevant forms of resolution, audit and accounts to the Commission of Billings? What about having the delayed AGMs, the EGMs, and the election and passing of a resolution and appointment of office bearers? Now, this has perhaps, it's not in this COVID law, perhaps the minister, I was reading through it, and then perhaps the minister may not want it in the COVID Act because the Strata Management Act is very wide. We have got Section 150, where minister can come up with a resolution. We've got Section 151, power to exempt. Perhaps the minister is trying to invoke this section of the law for strata-related cases rather than putting it inside the COVID Act. Now, but let me get my feelers around just to check. Why is it that the minister feels that, you know, it is not necessary to put it in the COVID Act? If the minister is serious on wanting to come up with regulation, or wanting to give exemptions, more power to the Commission of Buildings, COB, then by all means, please do it expeditiously and don't delay it any further. Presently, and AGMs, EGMs, presently we find that there's a circular floating around by the Ministry of Housing to say that AGM, EGM can be held. But however, it is limited to 30 people only in any AGM, EGM. Can you fancy that? Limited to 30 people. And it must be a first-come, first-served basis, depending on the size of the hall again, the meeting hall, and people above the age of 60 years old are discouraged to attend. Now, this is, this is fairly unfair to owners of stratified property. If they are owners, everyone should be entitled to vote or to be voted in as a volunteer in the JMB, to serve in the JMB, MC, whatsoever. Plus, it is about time we have online and virtual AGM or EGM.
Okay, we're going to just take a short break for some messages. We'll be right back. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned into The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon. And with me today is Datuk Chan Kim Loon, the Honorary Secretary General of the National House Buyers Association. Earlier in the show, we've been talking about the COVID-19 bill and some of the effects that it will have on house buyers, homeowners, landlords, and you and me. Now, Datuk, you've called for the government to implement income tax waivers instead, as it is more meaningful rather than overbought exemptions. Can you tell me a bit more about this recommendation that you're making?
Yes, I would. Now, our Prime Minister reiterated in Parliament recently in the current sitting that no Malaysian should be left out under this COVID-19 stimulus package. But this is an attempt by him to basically revive the economy when he introduced the Penjana Economic Stimulus Package, Recovery Package, via housing segment. He's giving exemptions of stamp duty. He's offering exemption of real property gain tax in the real estate market, all that. But my question is, what is there for the ordinary folks like you and me? Those people, ordinary folks who are taxpayers. Nothing in there talks about taxpayers being granted inverted commas, tax holidays. I'm proposing to the government that if the Prime Minister holds true to his parent call, the government should now consider wholesome waiver of income tax, or at the least 50% rebate on our personal income tax or corporation income tax for the next 2 years. Why I say that is because all of us pay taxes. If the government is serious wanting to ease our burden, the sufferings of the riot because of this COVID pandemic, the wholesome income tax I'm looking at is anything that is below 100,000. Now, the current scale in the income tax is that the scale for 100,000, the cumulative income would be about $10,900 tax payable to the government. Let's work out to about $900 per month. But if the government were to allow 50% off that figure, we will still have savings of $400, enough to put more food on the table, as well as cost of living has increased. That will alleviate the ordinary taxpayer having to burden themselves under this COVID. A lot of house buyers already, a lot of people rather, not just house buyers, tax payers are already suffering with this COVID pandemic. Similarly, corporation tax should also be reduced or waived. I'm looking at basically corporation tax, SME companies who have got small, medium-sized industries. They are presently be taxed about 17% as well as the balance being 24%. Perhaps the government should come up with 100% waiver for the first $1 million that they make. This is to ensure that condition could be attached in such a way there'll be less retrenchment. Limit the number of retrenchment in the industry because a lot of people now losing their jobs. So we are looking and appealing to the government to consider this area of waivers of income tax or at the least 50%.
One of the pushback I can imagine is that the taxes are a way for the government to generate revenue. And given the current conditions, government revenue is quite important. So wouldn't that also hurt like the people in the long run if the government does not have enough revenue to implement other policies to kind of like help with the situation?
Well, I've made some calculation, assuming that the government were to give a 50% rebate, the loss of revenue would only tantamount to 6%. And it seems manageable. as I'm concerned, because this money that is savings for the taxpayers will then be injected back into the local economy and generate more economic activities, which will somehow either offset the reduction in the government's burden. Now, similarly, like for instance, corporation, the tax waiver or the tax 50% relief would probably work up to only about 17%. And as a result, we see that it is within the power of the government to grant this tax. Like I say, it is not a total waiver, perhaps to consider 50% off. But to offset against this tax relief or tax holidays, I've also made two proposals to the government, one of which is the windfall tax. Now, it is said that in every crisis, there are always the lucky few people who benefit, in better commerce, benefit, and it has been, in fact, reported in newspapers that several companies are benefiting from this COVID. This includes the healthcare, the manufacturing of latex gloves, and PPE, those personal protective equipment. In fact, some of these owners have become overnight millionaires. The government perhaps could implement windfall tax. For the next 2 to 3 years, perhaps the government could impose windfall tax to those lucky few people, those corporations who made benefited from this sickness. My second proposal to the government was a digital tax. Now, the government should be implementing a new tax called a digital tax for those online strategy companies. There are a lot of giant technology companies out there who find very innovative way of not, or rather, avoiding paying tax. The government will now ensure that all providers of online goods and services that is used by consumers in Malaysia will have to pay taxes to our government. Government should not lose out this much needed revenue during these challenging times.
So, from the National House Buyers Association's perspective, would you say that the Penjana initiatives were more beneficial towards the property, real estate industry, property players, rather than the public, in terms of it helps these corporations more than it helps us?
Yes, it is true. This Penjana packages for housing, or very probably gain tax exemption, 70% loan package for third house that you purchase, as well as stamp duty exemptions on transfers of property, purchase of property up to the tune of $1 million. This is pro-developers package. I don't see why the government should indulge in wanting to help a small percentage of people rather than across the board that benefits all our taxpayers, all the right yet, whether it's B40 or the M40. They are the ones who need help most. Now, like in this Penjana package, can you fancy that the developers can't sell the product? They have the properties overpriced and they can't sell, and they're encouraged by the government to go ahead, indulge yourself in selling your product, and the government is going to come up with a stamp duty package of exemption up to the extent of $1 million. Now, that $1 million stamp duty saving tantamount to about $24,000 stamp duty. Why don't those developers sell it cheaper by 24,000 rather than the government sacrifice the revenue and then to encourage house buyers so that developer can offload the product? To us, it doesn't make sense at all. Why should the taxpayers' money be sacrificed for the developer in the first place? Income tax waiver would be a more across-the-board benefit for all rakyat of Malaysia.
I want to move on to another topic, which is the Residential Tenancy Act. Minister of Housing, Zuraida Kamarudin, she informed the public that she's proposing a new law in the form of the Residential Tenancy Act. And this is to curb against racist landlords and to control the rent quantum. I want to begin with the curbing racist landlords, because that's an issue that's has been a long time coming here in Malaysia. In your opinion, do you think a Residential Tenancy Act will be able to curb against racist landlords? And how would even that look like?
Unfortunately, racism and racist practices are prevalent not only in the tenancy market, but in other areas of life and in society in general. Perhaps a more holistic approach is needed, where instead of using this Residential Tenancy Act, RTA in short, to combat racism, we should educate potential landlords and tenants on the shared role and responsibility That should be the way forward. The problem may not only lie with discrimination of a particular ethnicity, more of a perception that certain ethnicity makes less palatable tenants and hence charging of higher rent. Now, this kind of perception would only be perpetuated due to lack of understanding or education in different cultures. We see no necessity in this law, this proposed tenancy act, to talk about racism or to curb racism in a law.
Okay, so how then can you balance out what the landlord wants and what the tenants need in a law like this then?
Well, the RTA, this Residential Tenancy Act, should protect the legitimate interest of landlords against errant tenants and protect tenants against irresponsible landlords. Now, from observation, there are problematic landlords too who refuses to repair property that has been that has been dilapidated, rented out to tenants, or some landlords who are recalcitrant who arbitrarily increase rental to tenants. Now, there are also equally recalcitrant tenants who refuse to be evicted when they fall back on their rental. They damage properties before they leave the premises, or just like more like leaving a property in a war zone. This experiences some landlords and tenants face. So therefore, it is very important for this RTA perhaps to come up with a standardized sale agreement, standardized terms and conditions of a tenancy agreement. Tenancy clauses would include, one, the fixed rental amount that is spoken about in a tenancy, the quantum of the deposit, maybe 2 months plus a half a month, electricity, water, utility charges, or terms and conditions about doing repairs, major repairs, or that landlords are not to arbitrarily increase the rental unless a certain percentage is identified in the tenancy agreement, or rights of the landlord to undertake repairs as well as to charge the tenant for repairs, as well as the rights of the tenant of enjoying the premises without disturbance from the landlord.
Okay, thank you very much, Dato. I think that's all the time we have for today's property show. That was Dato Chan Kim Loon, Honorary Secretary General of the National House Buyers Association. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.